Chapter 3. Crowded. Carriages, gigs, phaetons, stanhopes, and vehicles of every description glide smoothly on. The promenades are filled with loungers on foot, and the road is thronged with loungers on horseback. Persons of every class are crowded together, here, in one dense mass. The plebeian, who takes his pleasure on no day but Sunday, jostles the patrician, who takes his, from year's end to year's end. You look in vain for any outward signs of profligacy or debauchery. You see nothing before you, but a vast number of people, the denizens of a large and crowded city, in the needful and rational enjoyment of air and exercise. It grows dusk. The roads leading from the different places of suburban resort are crowded with people on their return home, and the sound of merry voices rings through the gradually darkening fields. The evening is hot and sultry. The rich man throws open the sashes of his spacious dining room, and quaffs his iced wine in splendid luxury. The poor man, who has no room to take his meals in, but the close apartment to which he and his family have been confined throughout the week, sits in the tea garden of some famous tavern, and drinks his beer in content and comfort. The fields and roads are gradually deserted. The crowd once more pour into the streets, and disperse to their several homes, and by midnight all is silent and quiet, save where a few stragglers linger beneath the window of some great man's house, to listen to the strains of music from within, or stop to gaze upon the splendid carriages which are waiting to convey the guests from the dinner party of an earl. There is a darker side to this picture, on which, so far from its being any part of my purpose to conceal it, I wish to lay particular stress. In some parts of London, and in many of the manufacturing towns of England, drunkenness and profligacy in their most disgusting forms exhibit in the open streets on Sunday a sad and a degrading spectacle. We need go no farther than St. Giles, or Drury Lane, for sights and scenes of a most repulsive nature. Women with scarcely the articles of apparel which common decency requires, with forms bloated by disease, and faces rendered hideous by habitual drunkenness, men reeling and staggering along, children in rags and filth, whole streets of squalid and miserable appearance, whose inhabitants are lounging in the public road, fighting, screaming, and swearing. These are the common objects which present themselves in, these are the well-known characteristics of, that portion of London to which I have just referred. And why is it that all well-disposed persons are shocked, and public decency scandalized, by such exhibitions? These people are poor, that is notorious. It may be said that they spend in liquor money with which they might purchase necessaries, and there is no denying the fact, but let it be remembered that even if they applied every farthing of their earnings in the best possible way, they would still be very, very poor. Their dwellings are necessarily uncomfortable, and to a certain degree unhealthy. Cleanliness might do much, but they are too crowded together, the streets are too narrow, and the rooms too small, to admit of their ever being rendered desirable habitations. They work very hard all the week. We know that the effect of prolonged and arduous labor is to produce, when a period of rest does arrive, a sensation of lassitude which it requires the application of some stimulus to overcome. What stimulus have they? Sunday comes, and with it a cessation of labor. How are they to employ the day, or what inducement have they to employ it, in recruiting their stock of health? They see little parties, on pleasure excursions, passing through the streets, but they cannot imitate their example, for they have not the means. They may walk, to be sure, but it is exactly the inducement to walk that they require. If every one of these men knew that by taking the trouble to walk 2 or 3 miles he would be enabled to share in a good game of cricket, or some athletic sport, I very much question whether any of them would remain at home. But you hold out no inducement, you offer no relief from listlessness, you provide nothing to amuse his mind, you afford him no means of exercising his body. Unwashed and unshaven, he saunters moodily about, weary and dejected. In lieu of the wholesome stimulus he might derive from nature, you drive him to the pernicious excitement to be gained from art. He flies to the gin shop as his only resource, and when, reduced to a worse level than the lowest brute in the scale of creation, he lies wallowing in the kennel, your saintly lawgivers lift up their hands to heaven, and exclaim for a law which shall convert the day intended for rest and cheerfulness into one of universal gloom, bigotry, and persecution. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.